antibiotics immediately in local hospitals. Most will live, and no others will be infected back in their respective intelligence facilities around the world. So, take the building, hold the attendees hostage, infect them secretly, wait for them to turn into weapons themselves, then let them free. That's it. Honestly, I think we can be out in 6 hours, especially if we detonate the explosives under the building. The ensuing chaos will make it highly unlikely the attendees will be transported and treated correctly in only 2 hours for the strain Dr. Wan created. Fox said, I am no military man, you know this. Still, I don't see how 18 men can take over that building, not even from the inside. There is a company of Scottish military on site, plus dozens of armed security. The original plan was an attempted covert entry and delivery of the aerosol, and only if our force was detected were they to engage. Taking and holding a massive building with that much security on site, it seems impossible. Yes, Mars said, but the sleepers on site have informed me that 75% of the security and 100% of the military will be outside the main building. Due to the classified nature of the items discussed in the conference, even during speeches in the Great Hall tonight, everyone without the highest level of access to secrets will be outside the keep itself. The mercenaries can hold the Great Hall as long as they get in quietly, and they can stall the response from authorities with good leadership, someone who can control the situation on the inside, someone who speaks English. Now Fox understood. You yourself are going in with the mercenaries. We, Artyom Alexievich, we. Fox nodded slowly. He'd been sent here as a sleeper by Russia to take orders from Zakharov, and previous to that, he'd been a member of the Vori. He was brave, committed, and skilled. Still, he asked, Do you have a plan to get us out of there? The original exfiltration through the passage is still the plan. We detonate the explosives in the subterranean level, and this will buy us time. They won't find the exit for hours with the destruction we will leave them to pick through. But if they do detect the passage entry down at the water while we are in the castle and cut off our escape, we will demand a helicopter. Take the heads of UK, Canadian, American, Australian, and New Zealand intelligence services along with us. That should keep anyone from shooting us down. We can fly to the continent, land in a busy area, and disperse among the crowd before authorities arrive. And how will you get into and out of the castle? We will have to cross Loch Ness underwater. I've never heard you mentioned you were a trained scuba diver. Zakharov said, To get out, I will put your reserve air regulator in my mouth, hold on to you for dear life, and hope for the best. Once my plan is enacted successfully, my life is unimportant. But to get into the castle, I have a different idea. Which is? Zakharov smiled. I plan on simply driving up to the front gate. Fox looked at him like he was insane. After a moment, he recovered. Well, we will survive the plague. We have more than enough antibiotics for that. But I don't know that we will survive penetrating a well-defended intelligence target like the Five Eyes Symposium. Zakharov said, If we live, we live. If we die, we die. Either way, if we succeed, we have utterly destroyed the West's intelligence apparatus. Zakharov looked up to Hines now. How about you, old boy? You up for a wee bit of excitement?
I go where Fox goes, sir.
Good chap. He looked at his watch. 5 hours till we move. Have the men make sure they remain hidden from the air. Because as soon as they are sure I did not die in the fighting at the church, all Five Eyes will be open in search of me. Court, Zack, Jenner, and the three other able-bodied men of Jenner's team arrived at Castle Enric in the early afternoon. They had changed out of their wet, sweat-stained, and bloody clothing from the action at the church, and now wore neat clothes, khakis, blazers, leather shoes. Court and Zack dressed themselves with clothing from the rucksacks of the dead and wounded of Ground Branch, and the surviving members of the team in the Hilo gave them dirty looks for this. As Court sat there on the Hilo in Aronson's dark blue suit, he fully understood the looks he was getting. He would have felt the same way if someone on his team had died and a virtual stranger put on his clothes. But there was no way he could walk around the Five Eyes conference dressed like a commando. His broken hand would draw attention, but when he unwrapped it to test it, he determined there was no way he could allow free movement of the broken bones in it, so he got Travers to reapply the metal brace and a fresh ace bandage. After landing, they walked to the main gate and were searched by Scottish military and met by Suzanne Brewer, who showed their badges to the security force on duty there to get them checked in. Then she told them to follow her into the castle. They all went directly to Hanley's third-floor suite. She told them, "We'll put you right back out as soon as we have some clue as to where to send you. We will, at that time, request support from the United Kingdom, a squadron of paramilitaries from SAS, because clearly you've shown yourselves to be unable to handle Zakharov and his men without assistance." Jaws flexed in anger, and eyes narrowed in the group of hard men, but no one commented. Brewer ignored the looks.
"For now, blend in. Try to look like typical security officers. I hope to have a target for you very soon."
Inside the command center next to Hanley's suite, over a dozen agency analysts pored over computers, checking satellite photos of the area, maps, traffic and security cameras and the like, all desperate to find a group of men, probably traveling on the roads, probably moving in this direction, and probably carrying weapons. British intelligence was in on it now, after a fashion, with their leadership putting David Mars and his known cohorts in the National Crime Database, and with the suspects involved in the mayhem at the church to the west being identified as an unknown group of military-aged Russian nationals. Local police were on the lookout now, but there was a lot of area to cover in the Scottish Highlands, and much of it was remote or rural. Outside the castle, British and Scottish security experts were told to be extra vigilant. A pair of police boats patrolled the waters of the loch, and helicopters flew patterns high above. In the late afternoon, Zoya Zakharova stood on the banks of Loch Ness, next to a two-door Nissan she'd stolen in Inverness, so she wouldn't be driving a hunted van around. She gazed up in the sky at the helicopters circling above Castle Enric on a cliff on the opposite bank, just barely visible through the mist pouring off the water, even now in the afternoon. With binoculars she'd purchased at a store in Inverness, she scanned the entire area, left and right. She noticed two small patrol boats bobbing in the water at the bottom of the cliff, a 50-caliber machine gun mounted on each one, along with a crew of four. Zoya wasn't flying blind by being here now. She'd seen the scuba tanks in the back of one of the vans, so she knew this was how her father's unit of commandos was going to infiltrate the conference. She couldn't figure out how they would do it, though. There seemed to be no other access up to the castle other than scaling that sheer cliff. And even if they did scale the cliff, they would be completely exposed to security forces in the parapets of the castle wall overlooking a well-manicured lawn. It would be a shooting gallery for the defenders if the attackers chose that means for their ingression. No, there had to be some other way into the castle grounds that could be accessed by water. She was missing something, but she wouldn't find it here, searching from across the loch. Instead, she looked again at the map on her phone, trying to find the best place for someone to put a boat in the water nearby. Somewhere out of view of long-range spotters on the security force of the Five Eyes Conference, but close enough to access the shore below the cliff. After a minute thinking about it, she decided that her father's divers would be in plain view of the castle if they tried to sail a boat out into Loch Ness to get closer. No. The scuba divers would not be diving off a boat. They would enter the water close enough to make their way to the castle directly without using a boat at all. It was probably 400 meters across the water here, an easy swim for fit men in still water. She looked on her GPS again, and within moments she found the spot. An inlet, just a half mile north of where she stood, was completely obscured by a hill from the castle across the blue water, yet close enough to swim from cover there to the area at the bottom of the cliff. Zoya was back in her car in seconds, racing to get a vantage point on the inlet. As she drove up the road in the blue Nissan, a gray commercial van passed by on her right.
She normally wouldn't have paid any attention to an oncoming vehicle, but in the front passenger seat was a blonde-haired giant. She didn't run into many men who were 6'9", so she identified him instantly. It was the monster who always shadowed Fox, the man who had beaten poor Court so badly. Twice. The gray van just drove on to the south, while Zoya drove on to the north. But not for long. Once the van rounded a turn behind her, Zoya slammed on her brakes, turned her little car around, and took off in pursuit. She didn't know if her father was in the vehicle, but she sure as hell did know that these men were part of his crew, so she decided to follow them. The tale lasted less than 10 minutes before they entered the beautiful little town of Fort Augustus, on the southern bank of Loch Ness, and here Zoya saw the commercial van pull to the side of the road. She herself stopped, pulled out her binoculars, and focused them on the scene just in time to watch her father, wearing a crisp suit and tie, step out of the side of the vehicle. Alone. The van drove off, leaving him there. Zoya couldn't believe her eyes. He was less than 50 meters away, unguarded, and she could walk right up to him, drive right up to him, run him the fuck down if she wanted. But for a few precious seconds, she froze. Could she really do it? She had been so certain until this moment. But now, when the fantasy met the reality in front of her, she hesitated. Slowly, she shifted the Nissan into gear, but just then, a taxi pulled up next to her father, and he climbed in. She muttered softly,
"Kakuko Shirta."
What the hell? She drove off, tailing the taxi. General Fyodor Zakharov took a deep breath to calm himself as his taxi pulled up to the guard shack in front of Castle Enric. There were a few cars ahead in the line. Each driver and each passenger had their documentation checked out by both Scottish military in full combat uniforms and men and women in civilian attire. No doubt Metropolitan Police or even MI5, British Domestic Intelligence. The taxi driver looked in the rearview mirror.
"I take it you got your papers to get in here. Been ferrying people back and forth from the hotels and B&Bs in Fort Augustus and Inverness to this big government conference, and the blokes here at the gate are all business."
Zakharov was using his David Mars legend.
"Don't worry, old boy. I'll zip right in. They'll be quite happy to have me."
They inched their way to the front of the queue, and then a young Scottish soldier looked in on the taxi driver, who said,
"Evening, mate. This gen here is for the conference."
Zakharov rolled his window down, and the soldier reached out a hand.
"Papers, sir." "Listen carefully, lad. Inside that building is a woman named Suzanne Brewer. She's a Yank. I am here to see her, and she will quite like to see me. You got papers?"
He pulled out his passport and handed it over. The man looked at it.
"No, sir. You need a special pass to get into the conference. That passport says David Mars. Be a good lad and go tap that name into your computer and see what pops up."
The young soldier stepped over to a man in a suit and tie and talked to him a moment while showing him the passport, and then the man looked in on the taxi. After some hesitation, he stepped into the guard shack.
The driver said, "How about you settle the fare and get out here, mate?"
Mars handed the man the fare in cash with a healthy tip, then opened his car door. He didn't need to stand up, because soldiers rushed him, grabbed him, pushed him onto the ground, and put guns to his back. Lying there on the drive next to the astonished cabbie looking down on him out his window, Zakharov said,
"Suzanne Brewer, CIA. If someone could be so kind as to call her, I'd appreciate it very much indeed."
Chapter 61. Suzanne Brewer sat at the opening night formal dinner, sipping Chardonnay and looking at her phone, held down below the table so as not to make obvious the fact that she was not paying attention to the man speaking. The director of the New Zealand Security Intelligence Service was giving a talk about the benefits of cooperation, and the 400 guests in attendance were eating salmon or fillet and trying to stay awake. An Englishman with the site security detachment knelt down next to her at the table.
"Ms. Brewer, is it?"
"That's right."
"We have a situation at the front gate. Could you come with me, please?"
I don't have anything to do with security here. You need to find someone who...
You've been requested personally, ma'am. She flashed a glance at Hanley, seated at another table and no less bored, and then she followed the younger man out through the tables and into the hallway. Once there, he stopped and turned to her.
There's a man we've taken into custody trying to get in to see you. He has no credentials, only a UK passport.
What's his name?
David Mars. He's showing up on a brand new watch list that was...
Brewer spun away and ran back into the banquet hall in the direction of Matt Hanley. Court Gentry had slept 5 hours that afternoon and early evening, but finally woke when the meds began to wear off and the pain in his hand began to flare up. He dressed quickly in Aronson's suit. It was a little big for him, but he made it work. Struggled mightily to tie his tie with one good hand and just the fingertips of the other, and he put his badge lanyard around his neck. He left his room and went to the lobby in front of the closed doors of the Grand Hall. A black tie affair was going on inside. He expected that a couple of Ground Branch men would be inside watching over Hanley, and he started to head that way.
Hey, Six, have you checked this place out?
Court turned to find Hightower, also dressed in a suit and tie, coming up the hall from the main doors.
The castle? No, not really.
There's an armory, a dungeon down below, three really swanky libraries. It's pretty sweet.
It's good to be king, Court said.
But he didn't really care about the old building. He was more concerned about where Zoya was and what she was doing. But he knew he had to be here, ready to kit up and climb back in the direct-action penetrator as soon as there was any sighting of Zakharov.
How is security? He asked.
Just fair, to be honest. The troops outside are the bulk of the protection of this place. Since the meetings in here are all classified, they are minimizing the number of security personnel inside the castle. The UK relies more on gates and cameras than it does on guns, anyway. I've seen maybe 20 armed guards inside the keep itself, but that's about it.
Suzanne Brewer burst out of the ballroom with Matt Hanley, followed by Jenner and Lorenzi. They walked at a fast pace, and Court and Zack fell into step with them when Hanley motioned to them. As he walked, Hanley said,
Zakharov turned himself in at the front gate.
Court said,
Why the hell would he go and do a thing like that?
Brewer answered,
We have no idea. He's being brought into a makeshift interrogation room on the third floor. I need you two there guarding him, at least till we know what his play is.
10 minutes later, Zoya Zakharova pulled her Nissan up to the guard shack. A woman in a Scottish military uniform nodded at her curtly.
Your credentials, ma'am.
Zoya spoke in her American English accent.
I'm here to see Suzanne Brewer.
The woman's brow furrowed.
I don't know who that is, ma'am. But you're not getting in without proper credentials.
Zoya had seen the entire takedown of her father through her binos from 200 meters away. She noted one of the men who, just 10 minutes earlier, had a boot in her father's back.
Sir, she said, and the man in the suit looked her way. David Mars, you just met him?
He stepped over, immediately wary.
Aye.
Zoya shrugged.
The thing is, he's my dad.
Unsure, the man reached over and put his hand on the female soldier's shoulder without looking away from the woman behind the wheel.
Take out your weapon, Sergeant.
The woman drew her pistol, and Zoya raised her hands. Fyodor Zakharov had been placed in a small room off the third-floor library and relieved of his suit coat, tie, and shirt, along with his belt, watch, and shoes. Hightower had frisked the man from head to toe, leaving nothing untouched in the process. Through it all, the former head of GRU had not spoken a word. Hanley, along with Lorenzi and Jenner, had gone to the security office on the second floor to meet with officials there, to warn them to be wary, and to look at the feeds from the myriad cameras around the castle for any sort of threat. Now the former Russian general sat in his undershirt and dress pants, hands uncuffed, fingers interlocked and resting on the table. Hightower stood behind him, close enough to take him down if he had to. Suzanne Brewer entered the room, out of her ball gown and now dressed in business attire. Zakharov smiled charmingly at her, and he spoke with an English accent.
Ah, Ms. Brewer, I presume. Lovely to meet you. I've heard a lot of interesting things. I believe you and I have a mutual acquaintance.
I assume you are talking about your daughter.
No, I'm talking about Martin Wheeler.
He told me about you, about Poison Apple. I told myself you were just the person I needed to speak to here, straight away.
Brewer was about to reply, about to sit down, but the door opened behind her. Turning to it, she saw Jason. She followed him back out the door without a word to Zakharov. In the third-floor library, Violator stood with Travers, both men waiting for orders. Brewer gave them both a look of anger for allowing this junior officer to interrupt her interrogation.
"What the hell is it?"
she asked Jason.
"Ma'am, it's Anthem. She's out at the front gate. She wants to see you."
She looked at Violator and then back to Jason.
"What the hell is going on around here?"
When no one answered her, she said,
"Take security with you. Go down and bring her up here, but only under guard. We don't know whose side she's on."
Court wanted to protest, but he didn't know what the hell Zoya's game was either. Instead, he said,
"I'll go with him."
Brewer shook her head.
"No, you stay right here, Violator. Jason can take Travers."
Brewer went back into the parlor off the library being used as an interrogation facility to continue her interrogation of Zakharov. 10 minutes later, Zoya Zakharova entered the library, followed by Jason and Chris Travers. Travers had been exceedingly polite during the long walk through the main entry hall, up the stairs, and down the narrow third-floor hallway, but he'd stayed close enough to her to give her the indication that he was something more than just an escort. Once she entered the library, she looked around for Brewer and her father, and instead saw Court standing there alone. This surprised her. She didn't expect to find a black ops contract agent like him inside the Five Eyes conference. She gave him a nervous look, followed by a little smile.
"Are you okay?"
Court replied with,
"Your dad's in the next room. This is as close as you get."
She said,
"I understand. Brewer is with him?"
"Yes. I guess your plan to kill him went about as well as our plan to hit the church this morning."
Zoya said,
"Maybe I didn't kill him yet. But I bet I've killed more bad guys than you did today."
"In my defense," Court said, "I slept in."
Zoya frowned.
"I am really sorry about that. I just..."
"I know. You needed some alone time to kill your dad."
Zoya nodded.
"I did."
Court shook his head in disbelief.
"If you think anybody is going to let you in there to talk to him, you're out of your mind. Not even me."
Zoya said,
"He isn't here to surrender. Something's happening."
Court nodded.
"We're all saying the same thing. There is some other game here, isn't there?"
"His men have scuba gear, that much I know."
Jason immediately took off for the war room to let the men there know this new information. Court said,
"But that will just get them to the shore at the bottom of the cliff. If they climb it, they'll walk right into a company of Royal Scots Dragoon guards waiting for them. They have jackal-armored vehicles with machine guns and grenade launchers. Those Russian paras would get chewed up in 10 seconds.
Zoya had no answer for this. It seemed like a pretty obvious flaw in her father's plan, but she knew he was far too good not to see it himself. The patrol boats out in Loch Ness traveled in a lazy pattern, and the 20 men under the water simply waited for them to churn away from the area they planned to use to land ashore. By the time they did, the divers had all moved to shallow water, and they rose as one in the dark, almost invisible in their thick black wetsuits on the cloudy evening. Each man had a large waterproof pack strapped to his chest and a smaller one on his hip, and each pair of mercs carried a massive heavy pelican case between them. The men took cover behind boulders on the narrow shoreline, then moved into the thick brush towards the hidden iron door to the staircase into the castle. After doffing their scuba equipment, two members of the team moved acetylene and oxygen tanks up to the door, attached and fired up the torch, and began working on the hinges. The rest began dressing in dark business suits and dress shoes brought in waterproof bags. This done, they pulled on thin nylon coveralls to keep their suits clean from the climb. Soon, the team pulled their short-barreled rifles from their packs and slung the weapons, packing extra magazines and radios into pockets. Each of the men put a headset on, and soon they ran a whispered comms check. It took the men with the acetylene torches 5 minutes to open the rusty door, and then while those two got dressed, it took the rest of the group 5 minutes more to remove the rock and dirt filling the bottom part of the tiny stairwell to make it appear inaccessible if the iron door had been checked by security.
The passage was less than 5 feet high, and so narrow it was claustrophobic. But eventually the first man on the team began climbing, and the next man followed. Fox entered, with Hines behind him, struggling to fit. The fifth man hefted the pelican case containing the 3 canisters full of the weaponized Yersinia pestis spores, and the rest carried the other cases of equipment. Finally, the last man pulled the door closed behind him and jammed it back into place on the off chance someone discovered it. 2 security officials from Scotland Yard stood with flashlights in one of the dozens of darkened basement chambers below Castle Enric, their beams pointed at a rusty metal door they'd just cleared of stacked boxes of dishes and plastic-wrapped linens. On the other side, they could hear movement, an acetylene torch being used on the inside of the sealed door. The shorter of the 2 men looked at his watch.
Taking too bloody long.
His partner wiped sweat from his brow and shined his light back over his shoulder, out of this little room and into a main chamber, once used as a common area for the servants' apartments built down here, but now used simply as a storage room for old, scratched, and broken banquet tables and chairs.
"We're okay," the man said, but his voice belied his words.
The men were not, in fact, English. One was born in Sevastopol, Ukraine, to Russian parents, and the other in Leningrad, now St. Petersburg. They were Russian agents infiltrated into the UK 15 years earlier as part of the sleeper program that Zakharov's wife had been part of. They spoke perfect British English and possessed fully backstopped and rock-solid legends and a decentralized controller in David Mars, their only link with their home nation. Suddenly, the door opened with a painful screeching of iron on stone. A flashlight beam illuminated the 2 men for a moment, then switched off.
Dobry vecher.
Good evening, said the shorter Scotland Yard investigator. Roger Fox climbed out of the tiny stairwell, 3rd in line, stood up fully, and wiped a small amount of the debris and dirt from his hands. He wore black coveralls and carried a backpack. Behind him, the men with the acetylene tank and the men with guns and heavy packs and cases struggled out of the passage and into the light, and then Hines crawled out on his hands and knees and slowly stood erect. As more men made it out of the stairwell and into the room, Fox looked over the 2 cops in the employ of David Mars. He said,
"Have you heard anything about someone being taken in at the front gate?"
The men looked at each other. The short one said,
"Not a word,"
Fox said.
"That must mean the Americans have him sequestered to interrogate him. Where would they take him?"
"The Americans have the entire 3rd floor to themselves. If I was going to take someone for a chat without the rest of the castle knowing about it, I'd take him up to 3.
Fox nodded, then turned to the mercenary team leader.
"Okay, take 12 men to the banquet hall to meet up with the other 2 sleepers there. I'll take 2 of your men along with John and these 2 sleepers. We'll go to the 3rd floor and recover the general. The rest will set up the explosives down here."
All the new arrivals to the basement took off their coveralls, revealing their dark business attire. Their short-barreled weapons were checked 1 last time in the dim light, and cases were opened. 3 men began pulling out several explosives and detonation cord, and with headlamps on, they began positioning them around the dungeon level of the castle, while the others headed for the stairs. Chapter 62. Suzanne Brewer looked at her watch. It was 9 p.m. and the banquet was in full swing downstairs. Up here in the makeshift interrogation room, she'd spent the last 15 minutes explaining to Fyodor Zakharov that he had no rights, that he would have no contact with the British here, and if the Americans wanted to, they would shove him in a suitcase and take him out of the Five Eyes conference and deliver him to an agency black site without anyone knowing they had him in custody. Zakharov seemed positively relaxed about his predicament. He noticed her looking at her watch and said,
"Can I bother you for the time? Seems someone nicked my watch."
To this, Brewer said,
"It's time to tell me why you are here."
"My plan has failed. I see that. I am able to face the facts. There is no sense trying to hide from the long arm of the United States of America. I decided it was best I turn myself in. Throw myself at your mercy."
Brewer just replied with, "Horseshit." 13 men in suits and ties walked up the wide corridor, not in formation, but grouped closely together. They approached the great hall. The three sets of doors were closed, and the murmur of voices and the clanking of plates could be heard over music playing. There were a pair of UK security men in front of each set of doors. The farthest pair from the approaching Russians watched them coming and immediately reached into pockets, removing red elastic sweatbands. These they both quickly slipped around their right biceps, indicating to the other Russians that they were the sleepers infiltrated into the security services and should therefore not be engaged as hostiles. When the other two pairs of men pushed off the wall and approached the group to check their badges, the two men with the red bands on their arms pulled silenced pistols from their hiding places inside their coats. The four security men standing right in front of them never stood a chance. The approaching group of Russians all stepped to one side of the corridor so as not to be downrange of the gunfire, and then the two Russians in back fired their suppressed weapons into the four men, dropping them dead before any of them knew they were in any danger. The bodies were left where they fell, and the music and crowd noise from the great hall masked the muffled gunshots. Now the Russians divided into three units, approached the three doors off the main corridor to the great hall, and waited. One of the sleepers looked at his watch and determined the time was right, and then he and his colleague entered the room, leaving the rest outside. The mercenary leader began counting back slowly from 45. In the drawing room on the third floor, Zakharov smiled and interrupted Brewer, who'd been getting nothing out of the ex-general. He said,
"I would like to make a polite proposal to you and to all security officials working in the building."
Brewer cocked her head.
"I'm listening."
"There is no need for anyone to get hurt. Yes, our original intention involved Dr. Wan's biological weapon. But as you know, the aircraft crashed today, no doubt due to the actions of your commandos. So now we enter our Plan B, with ambitions less lofty than before. We only wish to make a series of statements to the world press, and then to leave in peace."
Brewer's look of confusion matched her words.
"We?"
Inside the great hall, the two Russians with the red bands went in separate directions, along the walls, passing servers and bartenders, all of whom were MI5 employees due to the classified nature of the conversations, and they took positions on opposite sides of the huge, dimly lit room. The men themselves were counting down, and at the 10-second mark, they reached into their coats again, this time pulling out two flashbang grenades each. The only six armed men in the room covering 400 attendees were separated from one another, but only by 20 meters or so, standing along the wall. The three double doors off the main corridor burst open. The two sleepers tossed their distraction devices in the direction of the six armed guards, and then they turned away. Brewer was confused.
"You and who else? What are you talking about?"
Zakharov sat in silence for a moment, then started to speak again.
"I am talking about..."
The muffled sounds of explosions and the sudden chatter of gunfire seemed to come from inside the castle and somewhere below the room where Brewer stood.
Zakharov smiled. "I am talking about that. My forces have orders only to return fire to protect themselves. Whatever shooting you hear only happened because your people insisted on violence."
Zack Hightower drew his pistol, stepped forward to the seated man, and jabbed the barrel into the side of his head.
"How about I pop this one right now to get the ball rolling and then go down and deal with the others?"
Brewer put a hand up to stop him. The door to the room burst open, and Violator entered, his own pistol in his hand. Brewer said,
"Zakharov knows about this. It's some sort of attack."
"Not an attack," Zakharov protested. "Merely a political statement, although, as I said, my men will defend themselves if necessary."
In the banquet hall, it was pandemonium. In the initial attack, all six security men were killed, as well as four waiters and three conference attendees from the UK. One Russian mercenary had been shot through the knee. He was now down on the floor applying a tourniquet to his thigh. A second merc took a pistol round in his Kevlar vest, but it did not penetrate. The Russians who survived the first quick, chaotic gun battle rushed to lock all the doors, and two of them were positioned by the open hallway that gave access to the kitchen, making sure no one came or went via this route. A number of men and women in formal attire managed to escape through the kitchen before the mercs secured the hall, as well as through the double doors closest to the main entrance to the castle, but only about 40 of the nearly 400 were so lucky. The rest were rounded up and ordered to their seats. Most of the kitchen staff made it out the back before Russians sealed it off, but a few stayed behind, panic-stricken. These employees were rounded up and brought back into the great hall. The overhead lights were turned on, and all the 375 or so in the room were ordered to place their hands on the tables or lie down on the floor. Four armed men climbed onto the stage, their automatic rifles sweeping back and forth over the crowd. Four of the remaining Russians stepped back into the corridor and took up positions facing the main entrance of the castle. When a platoon of armed and armored Scottish military came bursting through the front door, fragmentation grenades were hurled at them by the men guarding the corridor, killing three and sending the others back outside to assess the situation more carefully before committing to another frontal assault. Zoya Zakharova entered the drawing room where her father was being held, followed by Chris Travers, who immediately grabbed her. Before he could pull her back out, she shouted, "What's going on, Papa?" General Zakharov turned to see her, and he grimaced.
"Zoyushka, I truly wish you weren't here among your friends from across the pond right now."
Brewer motioned to Travers to let Anthem go. Zoya turned to Brewer.
"What has he said?"
"Nothing. He's been stalling, waiting for whatever's going on to kick off."
The gunfire continued and seemed to grow closer. Court had moved to Zoya, ready to stop her if she made any moves towards her father. Hightower kept his gun pointed at the former GRU director, and Travers went out to cover the hall with Jason. Zoya yelled at her father.
"You think you can just shoot everyone here?"
"Heavens, no. That's not our game at all."
She thought a moment.
"The bioweapon. You brought the bioweapon."
"We lost that in the airplane crash this morning. Now we wish only to make a..."
Zoya stepped forward and shoved his head to the side, exposing his neck. Just like Travers, Court wasn't fast enough to stop her. She said,
"Stress hives. He's lying."
Zakharov was unmoved.
"The discoloration doesn't mean one is lying, only that one is under some stress. I should think everyone in this building, myself included, has reason to feel a bit of anxiety at present, don't you?"
She looked up to Brewer.
"I don't believe him. He told me at the church that he had a plan that Juan didn't know about. He said that before the crop duster went down. I don't think the plague was on that aircraft at all."
Brewer just stared back.
"Oh, shit."
Matt Hanley raced into the parlor now, tailed by Jenner. Zakharov turned his head to look at the new arrivals, but Hightower twisted it back around forward. Brewer said,
"There is a chance the attackers brought Dr. Juan's plague with them."
Zakharov said,
"No, we only wish to..."
"Shut the fuck up!" Zoya screamed.
Hanley had never met Zoya Zakharova, his third poison apple asset, but now was hardly the time for introductions. He simply addressed her.
"What do you think?"
"I don't think. I know he's lying. He will infect everyone here somehow. He's banking on the fact that we don't figure that out."
"Why on earth would I come myself if I had any intention of releasing the spores?"
Zoya did not even address her father. She spoke to Hanley.
"He needs to hold everyone hostage until the effects can't be reversed. He has to do this without anyone knowing they have been infected, so they aren't quarantined, but instead return to their home nations and infect others."
"Good Lord, Zoya. The plot you just concocted is much more diabolical than anything I could possibly come up with."
Zakharov followed with a snorted laugh. Just then, a voice called out from up the hallway, audible because the parlor door was open to the library.
"I'm looking for David Mars. I request you release him now. Downstairs, we have nearly 400 hostages in the Great Hall, which we have barricaded and wired with explosives. Other explosives have been set around the castle. We will grant you a 2-minute grace period, and then, if Mars is not released, we will begin shooting a hostage every minute. The first hostage will be from the United States. The clock begins now.
Gentry raced out into the library where Jason and Travers now knelt, guns facing the doorway. Whoever was shouting the commands was down the hall to the left, out of view, but the two Americans held their weapons up at the doorway in case anyone tried to enter.
In the parlor, Zakharov said, "My men will do exactly as they threaten. You can save a lot of lives by releasing me. In turn, I won't demand you come with me, Deputy Director Hanley, or you, Ms. Brewer, or even your security people here. They can stay."
He turned to his daughter.
"I will, however, demand that Zoya come along."
"Not happening," Hanley said.
Zakharov replied,
"You are hardly in a position of power. The directors of all five English-speaking intelligence agencies have been taken hostage and will be shot one by one if I am not allowed to walk out this door with my daughter now."
Zoya said, "I'll go with him." To Hanley, she said, "Sir, if you test his mettle, someone downstairs will be murdered. My father does not bluff."
Hanley hesitated. The voice down the hall called out that he had less than 1 minute before the first victim was to be shot in the great hall, and then he turned to Hightower.
"Let the prick go."
To Zoya he said, "We'll get you back."
Hightower lowered his pistol and took a step back compliantly. The Russian stood, walked over to a sofa where the items that had been taken from him were lying, and put his shirt back on and stepped into his shoes. He took his coat and tie in his arm, then began walking. Zoya followed her father through the parlor, into the library, and towards the hall. Court had taken a position behind an oak table, and when he saw what was happening, he stood up.
"You've got to be kidding."
She just looked at him without speaking as she passed. Court called back over his shoulder.
"Matt! Matt, what are you doing?"
Hanley came out with Jenner and Brewer.
"Let her go. They hold the cards for now."
Court stood, conflicted and unsure. Zakharov stopped suddenly, faced Court. He said nothing for a long time, just looked him over. Finally, he turned to Zoya.
"Your friend, I take it?"
Zoya looked down at the floor. The bearded Russian looked back to Court.
"Interesting. In other circumstances, I suppose I could be calling you son."
Court did not reply. He wanted to lift his pistol and shoot the bastard in the windpipe, but he remained still. Zakharov stood there silently for several more seconds, staring at Court, before yelling out in Russian,
"We're coming out!"
The Russian father and daughter disappeared up the hallway. No sooner had they gone than Jenner said,
"We're armed with pistols. I'm hearing grenades and automatic weapons downstairs. We're not taking down those Russians without a lot more firepower. We've got to get to the security armory on the second floor."
Hanley said, "Where are Greer and Lorenzi?"
"They were on night watch, so they racked out down in their room at the far end of this floor."
Hanley nodded.
"I want you to go grab them. Then all six of you make for the armory. There might be others up here we can recruit."
Jenner said,
"Not leaving you here, boss. You and Ms. Brewer will be safer coming along for the ride."
Hightower said,
"Jenner, it's your show, but I suggest we split into two teams to cover all the rooms faster. Violator and I will take Brewer and go right. You and Travers take Hanley and go left. Find Lorenzi and Greer, see if anyone else is hiding up here. We'll meet downstairs in the security office after we've had a look around."
Hanley loosened his tie around his neck, looked at Brewer, then said,
"Let's go."
At the turn of the hallway towards the main wing, Zakharov met Fox, Hines, two Russian mercenaries, and two of the four sleepers. Hines took Zoya by the back of her neck and yanked her to him, her feet nearly leaving the floor in the act. The general looked at his men.
"Who has grenades?"
Both the mercenaries immediately pulled a fragmentation grenade.
"Destroy that room. The deputy director of the CIA is in there with friends. Let's unburden him with the task I have for the others. Then follow me down to the hostages."
Pins were pulled, grenades were lobbed, and just as Zoya started to scream a warning, John Hines smothered her entire face with the palm of his hand. Zakharov began heading down the corridor for the main staircase, followed by all the others. Jenner was the first into the corridor, and he saw a man down the hall throw something towards the entrance to the library behind a muffled scream. He spun, raced back into the room, and turned Hanley away.
"Grenade!" he shouted, and Court grabbed Brewer with his one good hand and yanked her, heaving them both backwards in the air over the side of a large leather and wood sofa.
They crashed on the ground, and Court rolled on top of the woman. Jason turned to run away, and Travers put himself right behind Jenner, adding more protection to Hanley, as they ran back towards the little parlor used as an interrogation room. The first grenade went off, shrapnel fired in all directions, hitting Jason in the back and Travers in the upper right leg, just below his butt cheek. Both men went down. The second grenade wasn't thrown as well as the first. It bounced against the doorway and detonated just in front of it in the hall. Travers took a nick in the back of his head from this blast, then climbed up and trained his weapon on the entrance to the drawing room. No more grenades came, and soon Jenner, Court, Hanley, and Brewer were standing in the cloud of dust.
"Travers!"
Court found him down on the floor, grabbing his upper thigh. There was blood on his leg, on his hands, but he wasn't hemorrhaging. Still, he was obviously in a lot of pain. Hanley himself checked Jason.
"The kid's dead. Son of a bitch."
Chapter 63. Fyodor Zakharov finished tying his tie as he walked up the main corridor towards the great hall. At his side were Fox, Hines, and two men who had been trained by his wife 15 years earlier to blend in perfectly in the UK. Behind them all, Zoya Zakharova walked, trailed by two mercenaries holding PP-2000s, 9mm machine pistols with 30-round magazines. The men knew what they were doing, Zoya realized, because they stayed far enough back from her so there was no way she'd be able to disarm them before they poured bullets into her body. When Zakharov got to the lobby in front of the Great Hall, he turned and looked at his daughter.
"I would send you out the front door to safety right now if I weren't convinced you'd just find some way to get back in and come up behind me with a stiletto. No, I want to know where you are at all times." He paused. "You might not like what is happening, but you loved your mother and your brother. This is all for them."
Zoya shook her head. "You don't get to use their deaths to justify your madness."
"Zoyushka, I love you. But the one thing I believe in more than you is my cause. I should have killed you when I first found out you'd been flipped by the Americans. But I was weak, and now you are the one person who can threaten my entire plan. You need to watch yourself very carefully now. Spend the rest of your life hating me, pursuing me. I'll let you do this." He darkened as he said, "But don't you fuck with me right now, or I will kill you myself."
The former general turned and opened the door. Stepping in, he walked directly to the stage, aware of hundreds of terrified eyes tracking him as he did so. After 30 seconds, he'd moved through all the tables, and he stepped up to the lectern microphone.
"Ladies and gentlemen, I apologize for the interruption. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to keep you right where you are for a short time, before my colleagues and I leave you in peace."
He'd seen several bodies on the floor along the walls of the room, and he knew these men and women wouldn't buy the line about peace, but he wanted them as compliant as possible. He said,
"I'm going to speak with the military forces arrayed outside, men and women who are most certainly, even now, preparing to attack this building. I will explain the folly of that decision to them, but perhaps I could have Director Capshaw of the CIA and Director Rutherford of MI6 come with me outside to confirm the hopelessness of the situation. After that, we will make a series of statements publicly over the next several hours. Crimes committed by the Five Eyes nations against the innocent and unfortunate of the Third World. Within a few hours, my colleagues and I will leave, and you all may resume with your conference." He smiled, "perhaps with better moral clarity about your mission."
As Zakharov spoke, one of the suited Russian mercenaries stepped behind one of the small service bars that had been placed on the edges of the room and slipped off his backpack. He unzipped it a few inches and put a hand inside. Closing it around the knob of the tank full of specially modified Yersinia pestis spores held in aerosol, he took a few quick breaths. He'd already injected his antibiotics,
He would take more in 3 hours, and he would have a full IV infusion going into him as soon as they left this place and made it back to the freighter waiting for them off the east coast of Scotland. Still, he knew what he was doing, and he didn't like the fact that he'd have to breathe this shit at all. 2 more mercs did the same thing simultaneously behind other bars. As the former general spoke, the mercenaries turned the knobs, and a barely audible hiss could just be made out. Then the men stood back up. The one who called himself Fox watched them all, making sure they did as they had been instructed. He turned away when he saw all 3 men guard over their bioweapons as they sprayed invisible death into the air. Zoya stood in the back of the room, with Heinz's big hand on her shoulder. She watched her father, listened to his words, and paid attention to his every movement. This wasn't about a statement. He was stalling for time. She just knew it. She looked around the room, wondering if the aerosol had already been released into the air. She wondered if she was breathing pneumonic plague spores even now. Just thinking this had the effect of tightening her lungs, shallowing her breathing, making her eyes itch. Assuming they believed her father's promises, all the men and women around her in the Great Hall thought they would be free in hours. But these people didn't have hours. They had to get out of here so they could get treatment to stave off the plague. She had no way of proving her theory about the existence of the bioweapon. She only had absolute confidence in her thinking that nothing else explained the actions of her father. His assertion that there was no way he would have been here himself if he was planning on disseminating the spores rang hollow to her. Because she knew her father, she knew he would not leave it to chance that the entire operation would fall apart because he wasn't here, commanding it all, constructing the ruse to keep everyone in their seats and the forces arrayed outside the castle at bay, so the plague could root itself inexorably into each and every senior member of the 5 Eyes before they could return to their offices and their military installations and cause thousands more deaths. No, they didn't have time to wait. She had to act, and act soon, to end this thing. And the only way she thought she had a chance of achieving this was to go after her father. Just then, Zakharov, Capshaw, and Rutherford passed by on their way towards the door so they could go to the front door to talk to the military officer in charge outside about the dangers of the Scottish Dragoons attacking the castle. As he passed her father looked her way, and she saw in his eyes that he was worried about her. Not worried about her safety, but worried that his operation was in danger because of what she suspected about his plan. He did not slow, he did not speak to her, but in that moment, Zoya knew unequivocally that her father would make good on his promise to kill her himself if it was necessary to keep his plan on track. Suzanne Brewer walked behind her 2 assets as they moved quietly through the oratory, but her mind was not silent. She was afraid, yes, but her prevailing thought was unmitigated anger. How was it that one of her own agents, part of a program Brewer did not even endorse and wanted no part in, happened to have a father who seemed poised to kill most of the 7th floor at CIA? And she wondered if she was already infected with motherfucking plague. Her anger about Anthem switched to anger about Violator and Romantic. Working the sharp end of the spear running these maniacs was destroying her own life, taking her further and further from where she thought she would be at this point in her career. She would never rise higher as long as she was sending smelly bearded men or histrionic former Russian agents down dirty alleyways and into shootouts, shootouts that, despite her secret wishes, they always seemed to find their way back out of. Her fuming thoughts were disrupted when Violator motioned for her to stay where she was, walking along a set of pews at the front of the room by the ornate pulpit. He and Romantic ventured forward towards a doorway, and she stood back and watched, half hoping they'd get her the fuck out of there, and half hoping they would kick the damn tripwire and blow themselves up so she could be done with them. Zack and Court went to opposite sides of the large, wide-open doorway that led out of the oratory and into the main corridor on the 2nd floor. Court, on the right, sighted his weapon down the hall to the left of the doorway, while Zack, on the left, leaned out and aimed his pistol to the right. Zack immediately saw 2 men wearing dark suits. He thought they were security guards for the 5 Eyes conference, but something didn't seem right about their movements. They were patrolling in the opposite direction now, but they looked into each doorway, chatting. They didn't appear nervous enough to have been part of the force that had been overrun here. Nope, these were the bad guys.
Zack whispered to Court.
What do you got?
Court said,
I've got nothing. You?
Zack replied,
two assholes with guns. Opposition.
I win.
Court whispered back.
You win.
They motioned for Brewer to come forward, and she put her hand on Romantic's back. Then all three moved off to the left, Zack in front, then Brewer, then Court, who walked backwards, his handgun aimed at the two men 50 feet on, facing away. They checked each chamber on this wing of the second floor, but they found no one hiding out. As they reached the end of the corridor, they moved towards the armory to meet the others. Travers, Jenner, Lorenzi, and Greer, with Hanley in tow, met Hightower, Gentry, and Brewer at the entrance to the second floor security office, off a parlor that had been converted into a bar area for hotel guests. The office was locked and guarded by a pair of terrified young security officers who only opened the door when Jenner looked into the camera and then held his badge up to it. Once inside, the group of Americans made their way past a bank of security camera monitors and into a back room already open because the security men had armed themselves when the attack began. Lorenzi kept watch outside the rooms into the parlor while the rest of the men went to arm themselves with more potent weapons. While Jenner treated Travers's upper thigh and neck wounds with a medical kit he found in the armory, both Zack and Court picked out Sig Sauer Rattlers, 300 blackout rifles with short barrels, folding stocks, and sights with holographic reticles. They loaded the weapons and crammed flashbangs and loaded magazines into their pockets. Zack also strapped a pistol-grip Remington shotgun onto his back. Jenner and Travers then grabbed M4A1s, short-barreled, fully automatic rifles, and all the ammo they could carry. There were Kevlar vests on a shelf, and all the shooters put them on. They wouldn't stop rifle rounds, but could be effective against pistol-caliber ammunition. Court then passed a Kevlar vest out of the armory to Hanley, and another to Brewer. Hanley took off his coat and slipped it on, but Brewer just said,
"No thanks. That just makes me look like another gunman, and that's the last thing I want."
"Fine with me,"
Court replied, and he dropped it on the floor to return to the room to find more ammo for his pistol. Hanley barked at his subordinate.
"Suzanne, put on the damn vest."
She complied immediately and without comment. Hanley himself stepped into the office and grabbed a Remington shotgun, loaded it expertly, and carried it back out. Granted, it had been nearly 30 years since he'd left active duty for the CIA, but the shotgun he chose was virtually unchanged from the one he'd fielded back in his army days. Once everyone was outfitted, they looked at the bank of camera monitors. An entire row was blacked out. One of the security men said,
"They disabled the cams in the Great Hall and the ones in the lobby outside it. Looking at the others around the castle, we saw a couple of fishy-looking guys dressed like regular security, but they are up on four now. Might be that there aren't too many attackers, so they couldn't hold the entire building. They've got that one room and access to it locked down, and they have one little patrol to round up people hiding, but the rest of the castle seems clear for now."
Hanley addressed the six armed men from the U.S.
"Anthem says her father would only be here if there was a bigger mission than a hostage-taking. She thinks the plague will soon be released on everyone here. I am going to have to trust her judgment on this. We need to take this facility back, and it needs to happen soon."
Brewer said,
"Matt, there is something like 100 Scots dragoons outside. You think these six men have a better chance of..."
"Yes," he interrupted. "Right at this moment, I do. Zakharov doesn't know these men are Ground Branch and SAD Singleton assets. He thinks they're just bodyguards. He probably also thinks he killed us all with those frags they threw into the library. That gives us an advantage. He won't expect an attack to come from inside the building. Therefore, an attack must come from inside the building."
Jenner said,
"You need protection too, sir."
Hanley pointed out that there were already two Scottish security men here, and it was a secure room. He and Brewer would be fine here watching what monitors were still up and providing intelligence for the counterattack. Everyone put in radio earpieces and set them to the same channel, and soon the half-dozen men, led by Jenner, began moving through the bar and back towards the second-floor corridor. They found the east wing staircase barricaded. When Travers managed to get the door open a couple of inches, he looked through the gap and saw wires coiling over the table braced on the inside that seemed to be attached to the door itself. He turned back to Jenner.
"Booby-trapped. Could be explosives."
"Okay, we'll make our way out the first floor via some other route.
Looking at Hightower, he asked,
"Any ideas?"
"I walked around the castle for an hour earlier. Suggest the main staircase. They might have tripwires or something, so keep an eye open. But there are no doors, so it probably won't be blocked."
Jenner nodded. "Let's keep it tight, all angles covered. We move as a team."
"Roger," Zack said, and again they set off up the corridor.
Chapter 64. Fyodor Zakharov returned to the Great Hall along with Rutherford and Capshaw, who both went back to their tables while the Russian stepped over to Fox. Softly and in Russian, he asked,
"Is it done?"
"Finished distribution of the spores 5 minutes ago, sir."
"Very well."
Zakharov looked at his watch.
"We start the time now."
Fox nodded.
"You've taken your antibiotics?"
Zakharov asked.
"As I was climbing the stairs."
"Good.
I will read statements once every other hour on the stage, with an open phone line to the outside, and then I will begin the negotiations for a helicopter. That will take 6 to 8 hours. We will egress via the passageway to the lock as the helicopter lands."
Fox said,
"We only have one group of 2 men searching the castle for more conference attendees hiding out. I suggest we put more roaming patrols out in the building. They will eliminate any threats inside our defenses and will serve as a tripwire in case those outside enter the building. We have this room covered and have men to spare."
Zakharov said,
"Very well. Send the other sleepers out and 1 more 2-man patrol from the mercenary force. That's 3 teams. And get me a handgun. I will help keep the people in here compliant."
Zoya had been ordered to sit at one of the round tables along with a group of senior intel analysts from New Zealand near the center of the room full of round tables. The mood around her was somber. Those who whispered said they were sure the whole building had been wired to blow, and once this unknown man and his unknown force made their statement, they would set off the bombs. One of the men surprised Zoya by saying,
"Doesn't that guy look a little like General Zakharov, the old GRU chief who died? Chechnya or Dagestan, I think it was."
"Yes, but this fellow is obviously English,"
a woman replied. Zoya received several strange looks from her table mates because no one recognized her, and she wasn't in a ball gown. Instead, she wore jeans and a black tracksuit top, no makeup, with her dark hair back in a ponytail. Everyone seemed to assume she was one of the young MI5 members serving as the castle staff, and they left her alone. And Zoya did not interact with them at all. No, her focus was on Court, as well as the others up in the room. A pair of grenades had been thrown in, and she heard no shooting after that. But she'd been hustled down here and didn't know if the Russian attacking force had gone into the room to engage any survivors. She had no way of knowing if Court had made it, and no way of knowing his condition if he had managed to survive. Jenner sent Court and Zack to check the second floor for stragglers, and now they moved through the wardrobe, a large dressing and storage area for the lady of the castle. It had been converted into a conference room, but it retained antique paintings and furniture around a long oval table. Matt Hanley came over the men's earpieces suddenly.
"Romantic and Violator, halt."
Both men stopped in their tracks, said nothing, knowing Hanley would fill them in.
"The room in front of you just had its camera go dark. Could be a technical glitch, or there might be someone in there. Advance with caution."
"Roger."
The 2 men with the SIG Rattler rifles moved up to the closed door quickly and silently and stepped to either side. After a look from Zack, Court reached over and picked up a brass candlestick from a table next to him and heaved it across the room. It landed on the far side of the conference table with a clang. The door flew open and flashlight beams streaked across the room. A voice with an obvious Russian accent spoke English.
"I hear you, friend. Come out and join the others."
Zack gave Court a quick hand signal, indicating he thought there were 2 shooters, judging from the swaying beams, although he was flush with the wall and couldn't tell for sure. He lowered his Rattler on his chest and grabbed the shotgun on his back, bringing it forward.
"Who's there?"
the man called.
"Who's there?"
Zack Hightower knelt and spun into the doorway, fired a blast, pumped the forend of the weapon, and fired again.
"It's America, motherfucker!"
Zack blasted 3 more shells from the shotgun, covering the darkness with steel shot, then spun back to concealment to reload.
Court swung his own body into the doorway now, ready to fire fully automatic, but first he shined his light on the room. Two buckshot-riddled bodies of armed, bearded men lay just feet away. He looked to Zack.
You've been waiting your whole life to use that line, haven't you?
Zack slung his shotgun and again grabbed his rifle.
Haven't been waiting. That's the third time I've pulled it out.
I need some new material.
The men moved out. With the fresh gunfire upstairs, Zoya's head popped up with the rest of the room and turned towards the sets of double doors to the main corridor. But while the people around her wondered what was happening, Zoya felt like she knew.
There had been at least some survivors in the library where the grenades were thrown, and they were now fighting back.
She hoped like hell that Court had been one of the ones who'd made it, although he'd been close to the doorway as she left, and she worried he would have been right in the middle of the blast radius of the grenades. The fact that some sort of combat had started back up indicated to her that Hanley had listened to her when she asserted they didn't have time to wait, that each hour before getting antibiotics into the bloodstream of the attendees meant another hour closer to death for everyone. That she'd been listened to and positive action had been taken to fight back filled her with new hope and made her return her mind to coming up with a way she could be involved in ending all this. She was certain she could be helpful to those trying to retake the castle from the inside, but to do this, she needed to accomplish two difficult things. First, she needed to gain some intelligence about the force in here they'd be facing, and second, she'd need to find a way to get the hell out of this room. She looked around. The lights were up, so she had no problem scanning the entire area. She counted the armed men around the room, difficult to do without being able to get up and move around.
Ultimately, she determined there were either 12 or 14, plus Fox and the goon Hines, who followed him everywhere.
And her father. She almost didn't count him. Yes, he was a combatant too, but this wasn't relevant intel for the group outside. Because whatever happened, she still planned on killing him herself. Fyodor Zakharov sat with Fox on the stage at the front of the Great Hall, with Hines standing compliantly behind. He watched Zoya in the center of the room as she looked around. He cursed himself for thinking about his daughter right now. He had kept his focus on his mission, his life's work, playing out this very moment. But he could not help but look across the room, gaze at his beautiful daughter, and consider whether to take her out of here and administer antibiotics to her right now. He was a realist. So for the good of his mission, he knew he absolutely should not. For one, once he gave them to her, he'd have to sequester her from the rest of the hostages so she didn't alert everyone. And that meant he'd have to take one of his too few mercenaries here to guard her in some other part of the castle. It also meant when he and his team slipped out of here, he'd have to bring her along, and the thought of making their getaway with a non-compliant, resourceful, and clever enemy, he had no question but that she was now and would forever be his enemy, left him feeling frustrated. For 10 minutes he thought about nothing else, but ultimately he told himself Zoya had put herself in this position by siding with the Americans. He didn't have the manpower to spare in dealing with her, and she could